Finished chapter 8 last week, and at the end of the chapter, we talked about how the people did not receive the message of Jesus. They didn't like what he said, even though that back in verse 30 of chapter 8, they had been believers, or called believers. They had a beginning of faith, but that faith did not mature. And when Jesus was saying the hard things, they didn't want any part of it. And at the end of the chapter, they decided that they wanted to stone him. And Jesus had to slip out to avoid that stoning. At the end of verse 59 in chapter 8, it says, "So passed by." And that may not mean much to you, but it does perhaps to me when we open up the next chapter, the next verse. And it says, "And as Jesus passed by." That goes hand in hand with how chapter 8 ended. Chapter 8 ends with being threatened to be stoned, threatened to be killed, to be murdered, simply for teaching the truth. Chapter 9 opens up, and in the same thing, in the same mindset, as he is simply passing by, he stops to take the opportunity to heal someone. Now, that tells me that Jesus didn't change his focus. He didn't do anything any different than he would any other time. Even though people wanted to kill him, he didn't stop. He didn't back down. He didn't change anything. And that is a lesson for us. No matter what happens in our life, we can't pass up opportunities. It says, "As he passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth." Now, this guy had not had an accident or anything of the sorts. He just simply was born blind. Verse 2, it says, "And his disciples asked him, and they said, 'Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?'" Now, that's a fair question. You ever wondered that before? Maybe you see someone that's really suffering with something, and you know they've got this just huge problem. And sometimes in our mind we think, maybe they did something wrong. Maybe their family's been pretty rough, and they've been very sinful people, and maybe God brought it upon them because of all of that. And to be fair, we probably do think that sometimes. When we see people that's just really down on their luck, and it seems like they just have things piled up on them more and more and more all the time, sometimes we're tempted to do that. And that's exactly what these disciples did. They saw someone that had a problem, that had a problem for his whole life. And this was a full-grown man. And their first response was, you had to do something wrong. But that was always a biblical response, not a biblical, I guess, but examples of it in the Bible. Jesus, the Bible says, was afflicted and smitten by God, Isaiah 53, verse 4. And the Bible says there that we look down upon him, Isaiah speaking of all of us. And we said, Jesus must have did something wrong to be crucified, because only the most vile criminals are crucified. So therefore, if Jesus is getting crucified, apparently there's something wrong with him. When Paul was bitten by a viper in Acts chapter 28, what did the people there say? Man, this guy must be a bad guy. He must be a vile sinner, because only a vile sinner would a viper bite. It doesn't bite a good person. But you and I know that not to be the case, right? Jonathan preached a lesson here. I'll pick on him a little bit. Not too long ago, and he talked about, why? Why does these things happen? I don't know. Do you? Why do some people, be down on their luck, seems like their whole life? I don't know. But God knows. And God's in charge of all of that. And it's not my place to question why. Because, again, I don't have an answer to it. But that was these guys, that's what they wanted to know. What's the reasons, Lord? Why is this guy the way he is? Verse 3, Jesus answered, "Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him." Now, in the first place, Jesus did not mean that he was a perfect man and his parents were perfect people. He's simply saying he's not blind because of any particular sin. This is not punishment that is passed down upon him. In fact, punishment's not passed down. In Ezekiel 18, verse 20, the Bible tells us that the son doesn't bear the iniquity or the guilt of the father, and the father doesn't bear it to the son. In other words, all of us stand for ourselves, so things aren't passed down anyways. And that's not why this guy was blind. Jesus says he happened to be blind, and God is going to be glorified through that. God can take someone that is down upon their luck, that has fell upon hard times, and God can use that. And he can use us to do things like that and to help people like that in order to glorify him. Now, I want us to notice something here. These disciples, I wrote a note in my Bible. These disciples, their whole concern when seeing someone down upon their luck was, how did he get that way? And like I said, we're like that, right? We see people down on their luck, and immediately we want to think, well, why did that happen? How did that happen? You know, we've got to figure all of these things out. But that was not Jesus' concern. I wrote down here, Jesus, his concern was not how did he get that way, but how can I help him? Doesn't matter sometimes, does it? Do some people get down upon their luck and fall upon hard times because of just really poor decisions? Yes. Did Jesus still help those people anyways? Yes. Just in the last chapter, did we not talk about, this was a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, a woman taken in the very act of adultery? She had got herself in a bad situation, right? Because of very poor decisions. What did Jesus do? How can I help her? What can I do for her? He didn't want to ask all those questions that we ask, because that's not what he was about. And we need to learn to be a little more like Jesus. When I say we, I mean me. Don't worry about the how and the why, but try to worry more about what can I do to help this person, to glorify God, because, again, that's what Jesus said this is about. It's glorifying God. It's showing that he is in control. Jesus says, verse 4, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day, for the night cometh when no man can work. Jesus understood that his life was getting close to the end, right? And Jesus is simply telling us, hey, while we have life and breath and ability, we need to use it. Jesus says, I'm going to use it. As long as I am here, long as I am living, as long as I am able, I'm going to look for opportunities to help people. And you and I need to do the same. Because there's going to come a day when the night comes, we're going to near the end of our life. And it's all going to be over. And I know that there's not a person in here that wants to lay on their deathbed full of regrets, do we? And think, boy, you know, I wish I'd have spent more of my life trying to help people. I wish I'd have spent more of my life trying to do good deeds. Not that good deeds are going to get us to heaven. Not that we're going to ever be able to earn that. But at the same time, we want to leave behind a legacy for the people to follow. No doubt that the Bible tells us that the good works that we do are going to follow us, Revelation 14, verse 13. And all of us want to do that. So let's not live our life so at the end we've got regrets. Let's do the works of the Lord while it is day, while we have ample opportunity. Jesus says, verse 5, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Now, that may not seem like a whole lot, because it's something that he has said over and over and over again. But I want you to look at it from the perspective of where we are. This guy has been born blind, right? He has never seen with his eyes. And Jesus is going to heal this man. And he tells him, I am the light of the world. What does the light do? Does the light not illuminate our way? Give us the ability to see where we're going? To know what to do, all of those things. Jesus says, I am your spiritual vision. Yes, I'm going to heal this guy of his physical blindness, but I am also the great healer of spiritual blindness. Now, that's going to come into play greatly at the end of this chapter, because he's going to teach about all of this spiritual blindness that these people have, that they cannot see the things that they need to see. And all through these teachings that we've talked about, these people have been spiritually blind. Jesus spent all of chapter 8 and all the way really through the whole book defending himself. I am from above. I am deity. And these people continually can't see it because the devil has blinded them. And Jesus says, I am the light that shines in the dark place. I am the one that can give you the ability to see, but you've got to take advantage of what I'm willing to give. that's what he's talking about. Verse 6, when he had thus spoken, he spat upon the ground, and he made clay of the spit. And he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay, and he said unto him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. He went his way therefore, and he washed, and he came seeing. Now many have debated, why did the Lord make mud? That's what he did. You ever been a little kid and you make mud pies? When I was a little kid, we loved to make mud pies. You know, play in the mud. I was a boy. All I wanted to do was play in the mud. Still like to play in the mud. But why did he make mud and put it on the eyes of someone? If you're going to restore sight to the blind, can you imagine going over here and seeing Garrett Shepherd? And I could, he can restore sight to the blind. But could you imagine going and seeing Garrett Shepherd over here and the first thing he does is spits on some dirt and rubs it around and says, now, go home, wash that off, and everything will be okay. You won't go back, will you? No. You know, you're going to report him, and he's going to be in all this trouble. That's not what people do. So why did Jesus do this? Think about that for a minute. Why would he do such a thing? I've read different commentaries, but my response is he forced the man to obey the command. That's what he did. He is teaching us, in order for you to get what you want from me, you got to do what I say. Now, if he just simply told that guy, you go wash in the pool of Siloam, well, he might have, or he may have been like Naaman. He may have argued and bickered and fussed and said, ah, there's all these other things I can do. But when he put the mud upon his eyes, in order for that guy to see, he had to what? He had to wash it out. He had to wash it out somewhere. So maybe it was Jesus forcing this man to see. Maybe it was symbolic in a sense. I think Jesus literally did this. But maybe it was representative of washing away filth. Because this whole account is representative of becoming a New Testament Christian. This whole account is just like Mark 16:16. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that goes and washes this mud off in the pool of Siloam is going to be able to see. It's the same. It's the requirement that you got to believe what I say, and you got to act upon that belief in an active, obedient faith in order to receive the thing that I'm offering to give. It's the same all the way through. So this guy had to do just like Mark 16:16. He had to go and do exactly what the Lord said in order to receive the thing that he desired the most. Well, the Bible said he went his way, therefore, and he washed, and he came seeing. He did exactly what the Lord said, and he got exactly what the Lord said he would get. And the lesson for people today that they don't see is if you want to obtain the salvation that the Lord offers, you've got to do exactly what he says. I don't care what grandma or grandpa or aunt or uncle or whatever pastor said to do. It doesn't matter. It's what the Lord said to do, because he is the one that is the Word. He's the one that's the light of the world, and we don't get to make decisions on how it is. We don't have bylaws, and we don't have board meetings to decide what's going to be right or wrong. We don't do that. We just simply do what he said. And this guy had to learn that. And in him learning that, he's going to pass this knowledge along to a lot of other people. Verse 8, the neighbors therefore, and they which before had seen him that he was blind, said, is not this he that sat and begged? Well, people begin to notice. Hey, I've seen that guy. I've seen that guy so many times, and this guy was the one that he made his whole living sitting out here. You know, maybe he had a can in his hand, I don't know. And he just simply had to beg every day because, think about it, you're in the first century. You don't have much. I mean, it's a very, what we would call a very primitive lifestyle. And maybe the only way for a blind person to be able to eat would be to beg. Either that or you got a very wealthy family and they're going to provide for you. You know, if you live to be 75, they're going to have to provide for you your whole life. Because they didn't have things that we have today. Advances where maybe people could do some different things. Maybe you had to beg. And people knew him by that. He was always the one sitting there with his hand out, needing something. So they knew. They knew he couldn't see. You can't fake that. But for so long, maybe you might pretend, but you're not going to fake that for years and years and years every day. You can't. So the people knew. Verse 9, some said, this is he. Some says, hey, I know this is the guy. This is the one that's been blind all these years. Others said, he is like him. Well, that can't be him because I know that guy was blind. Maybe this is just a twin brother we didn't know about. But the man spoke up, and he said, I am he. He was proud of it. Would you not be proud? If you were blind and somebody gave you your vision back, man, I'd be proud. In fact, I had to wear glasses and contacts for 22 years, and I went and seen Alyssa Hudson over here, and she fixed my eyes, and man, I can see, and I can still hug her today, and that was 10 years ago. It was just wonderful to be able to see without anything helping you to be able to see. And no doubt he was proud about that. Verse 11, or verse 10. Therefore they said unto him, how were thine eyes open? Now he's beginning to be questioned. And we're going to see this repeat over and over and over through this whole chapter. Verse 11, he says, he answered and he said, a man that is named Jesus, he made clay and he anointed mine eyes. And he said unto me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed and I received my sight. Now, I want to ask you something. Is that simple? I wrote in my Bible, simplicity, beside that verse. How do you misunderstand a verse like that? There was this guy named Jesus. He gave me specific instructions. When I did exactly what he said, I got exactly what I wanted. And that's still the case today. When we do exactly what he says, and I don't mean to be repetitive, but this thing is repetitive because he knows that we as a people need to have things repeated unto us over and over and over again, or we will not retain it. We tend to forget so easily. But it's so simple. Notice too, and I think I've taught John 9 here a long time ago, so maybe we talked about this then, but we got to teach it again. We're going through the book. Notice here again, you might make a note in verse 11. This is the beginning of the man's faith. You'll notice he says, a man called Jesus. And we're going to understand more of what I'm saying as we go along. But at this point, when the guy speaks of Jesus, he's just a man. And his name is Jesus. And that's pretty much all he knows. He didn't have any reason to know anything more at the time. Verse 12. Then said they unto him, where is he? Well, man, if this guy can do amazing things like this, where's he at? Now, these people knew him already, didn't they? I mean, hadn't he been defending himself before all these people for the whole book? But yeah, they want to know where he is. They're going to question him. They're wanting to figure this thing out. They knew this guy, and they knew what he had done for him. But the man says, I don't know. I don't know where he is. Verse 13, they brought him to the Pharisees, him that aforetime was blind. Well, just the common people couldn't figure things out on their own. You know, and they weren't making any leeway, so we're going to go to the big dogs. We're going to the Pharisees, and we're going to let them question him. Verse 14, and it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. John threw that in there because the Pharisees did not like it when Jesus did anything on the Sabbath day. Verse 15, then again, I underline again in my Bible, because he's questioned again, over and over. Again, the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. And he said unto them, he put clay upon mine eyes, and I washed, and I do see. Again, as simple as you can get. No way to misunderstand. Therefore said some of the Pharisees, this man is not of God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. Others said, how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. Now I want you to notice, let's get back up to verse 14 a minute. In the minds of the Pharisees, Jesus had committed two wrongs. Number one, he healed a man on the Sabbath day. Number two, he had used his hand to knead. You notice verse 14, it said he made clay. In order to make clay, you take water and you take that red dirt and you do what? You roll it and you knead it in your hands. And according to the law or their traditions of the Pharisees, you were not allowed to need anything on a Sabbath day. So not only had he broken the Sabbath by healing, but he had broken it by needing in their minds. Well, but again in verse 16, notice something else. They did not deny at this point there is a division among the people. Some of them simply say, hey, this guy broke the Sabbath. That's it. But a lot of the other ones could not deny a miracle had been performed. But the problem was they did not understand how could a sinner do such a miracle. Because see, in the eyes of the people, and rightly so, only someone from God, you know, a prophet, one of these guys like Elijah or Elisha that you read about, those are the people that have the ability to do miracles. And they're not just your average, ordinary sinner. You know, in their minds, they're somebody special. But they didn't deny the miracle. They just could not understand how somebody that was guilty like Jesus in their line of thinking could do such a thing. Verse 17, they say unto the blind man, again, you can underline that again, continually questioning, what sayest thou of him that he opened thine eyes? Well, the blind man, I don't know what else to call him, not blind anymore. But he said, he is a prophet. Well, you might want to underline that. Because it was just up here in verse 11, he is simply a man named Jesus. But when you get down to verse 17, now, this guy's faith has been tested. You know, he just has a very small, just a minute mustard seed of a faith to begin with. He just understands there's somebody named Jesus. And this guy, Jesus, can do amazing things. But once his faith is tested, then it begins to grow. And isn't that what Jesus taught? Blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my name's sake. That's what he said in that last beatitude, right? He said, rejoice and be exceedingly glad, he said, because they did the same thing to the prophets. Isn't that what James says, my brethren, when you fall into various trials, you count it all joy? You get excited about it because those trials, those difficult times, they will produce patience, and patience will make you a complete, faithful individual. And that's what we see unfolding before our eyes. Because we continually, that's why I told you to underline that word again, because they continually test this man's resolve. And he's either going to wilt under pressure and he's going to fold, or he's going to rise up to be what it is that God would have him to be. And up to this point, we see that he is rising up. He's ready for the challenge. Verse 18, but the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. Well, don't people do that today? They see something and maybe they understand that's what the Bible says, but they always got an excuse. You ever talk to someone that's always got an excuse for whatever it is? You know, the Bible may say that, but you don't understand. There's no buts. These Jews, I mean, there was overwhelming proof. Everybody knew who this guy was. The guy is testifying. They're going to go to his parents. They're going to do everything they can, but they're still going to try to say, he wasn't really blind. It was all just a show. It wasn't really the case. But you see, that doesn't hold water. It never has. It never will. We need to understand that today. Excuses do not work before God. So verse 19, they're talking to his parents. And they ask him, and they said, is this your son, whom you say was born blind? How then doth he now see? I mean, is this really your son? You know, maybe you forgot what he looks like. Maybe you hadn't talked to him in a while. Maybe this is an imposter. Hey, was he really blind? I mean, they're looking for every excuse they can get. They're grasping for every straw. Verse 20, his parents answered them and said, we know. I underline that, we know. There's not a shadow of a doubt that this is our son. Maybe the mother says, I gave birth to him. I raised him up. We have watched him to grow and mature, and we know that this is him. They said, and we know that he was born blind. they would know more than anyone else, right? They had been through all of that horrible ordeal to try to raise up that child and teach him to live in a world without sight. And no one else they could ask that would have been any better. Verse 21. But by all means he now seeth. We know not, or who hath opened his eyes. We know not. He is of age. Ask him. He shall speak for himself. Now, don't you think his parents knew it was Jesus? Let me ask you something. If you had been born blind and you know, maybe you raised up and, you know, odds are he's not married, he don't have any children, he don't have anybody else. When your sight was restored, more than likely, who are you going to tell first? We get the picture, right? More than likely, he told them first. And we're going to find out what the problem was in the next verse. But they said, well, we don't know. We don't know. And they're passing the buck. He's old enough. He's a full-grown man. Odds are he's 30 years old here. He's of age. And of age during this time period would be you would have to be that age. He's full-grown. Ask him. He can speak for himself. They're passing the buck. And not only are they passing the buck, but they're passing it on their child. I can't imagine that. Why would they not stand up and defend their child? Well, they have a problem. Verse 22. These words spake his parents because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was the Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Now, isn't that a shame? I mean, these people are turning their back upon their child and throwing him to the wolves simply because they do not want to lose their place in society. And that is pitiful. And, you know, people still do that today. They will turn their back upon anyone that will stand for the truth because they do not want to lose their place in society. And that's what's wrong with our country today. We are more concerned with prestige and pride and places of esteem than we are about what is right and what is wrong. And we worry so much about not offending anyone and making sure everybody's all hunky-dory happy. And that's not good. And that's the problem with these people right here. They threw it back upon their son. Therefore said his parents, he is of age, ask him. Verse 24, then again. There you go, you can underline it again. Then again called they the man that was blind, and they said unto him, give God the praise, we know that this man is a sinner. Give God Almighty, God the Father, the glory. Because apparently God did this some way. But they're saying, we know Jesus didn't do it. There's no way that Jesus could have done that because Jesus is a sinner. He broke the Sabbath. He used his hands to knead some clay. He healed somebody on the Sabbath. And he's a sinful individual. But notice again, they couldn't deny the miracle. They are continually trying to the best of their ability to get around this thing, but the evidence is just overwhelming. It just keeps piling up in the man's favor, in Jesus' favor. So now they're going to turn and they've got another excuse. They're going to grasp at another straw. Well, just God did it. Can't be Jesus. Can't be Jesus. Verse 25. The man was just tested again in verse 24. Verse 25, he's going to stand up again. And he answered and he said, whether he be a sinner or not, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. That's a pretty good statement, isn't it? He said, I don't know everything about Jesus. I don't know his background. I don't know where he came from, what he does. But here's what I do know. This is what he did for me. We talked about a couple weeks ago on Sunday morning about giving our testimony to people, simply telling them what God has done for us individually. Do you realize that's exactly what he did? He says, I don't understand everything about everything. I don't have all the answers, but here's what I do know. I was a man that had been blind my whole life, and I did what he said to do, and I can see. Can't we tell people the same thing? I may not have ever answered every biblical question, but I know I was a sinful individual. And I know when I did what he said to do, he forgave my sins. And I don't have them anymore. And that's our testimony. It's not anything just dramatic and otherworldly. You know, we don't have to use big fancy words. This guy didn't. He just simply told what he did for him. He gave his testimony. And again, we need to do likewise. We need to tell people the same thing. Verse 26. Then said they to him, there it is again. How many times is that now? I've not been keeping count. A lot, right? I mean, they are pressing this guy. They are hammering this guy. No doubt his faith that started like a mustard seed, it's growing, but I mean, you know, he's going to have to wilt under pressure, right? I mean, we would most of the time. I shouldn't say that. Or a lot of times we do. We wilt under the pressure. But they ask him again, what did he to thee? How opened he your eyes? I mean, the same question over and over and over again. And no doubt he's getting sick of it. Verse 27, he answered and he said, I have told you already, and you did not hear. He said, wherefore would you hear it again? Isn't that what you would say? It's what I would say, right? Man, you guys have asked me 10 times, and I've given you the same answer every time. Why do you want to continue to ask me the same thing? But he's not done yet, man. This guy is bold. This guy understands what Jesus did for him. And he says, if you heard it again, will you also be his disciples? Now, you may not think so, but that was huge. I mean, he is standing before a group of the chief people in the town, the people that have the power over him, and he tells them straight to their face, if I tell you again, you're going to follow him too? Are you going to be a disciple too? You think there were some red faces? You think there was maybe some teeth grinding? You think maybe just people were just, I mean, they were ready to stone him probably. But his faith is growing. In fact, I drew another star in my Bible and I put faith growing. First, it's just Jesus. Then it's a prophet. And now, by asking those people, are you also going to be his disciple? What does that mean? If I ask if you're also going to do something, that means I'm doing it myself, right? He is claiming to be a disciple of Jesus. And a disciple is one who follows the teacher and the teaching. So this trials that he is undergoing has pushed him to the place, closer to the place that God would have him to be. Verse 28, we're going to have to speed up if we're going to get done. Then they reviled him, and they said, thou art his disciple, but we are Moses' disciple. You may want to follow this guy Jesus, but we still don't want to follow him. We live under the law of Moses. That's what we live under. Verse 29, we know that God spake unto Moses. As for this fellow, we know not from where he is. Now, how many times have we read in this class of Jesus telling them exactly where he's from? I'm from above. I'm from the Father. He sent me down. I mean, it's just been over and over and over again. But the problem is they didn't want to hear it because they were spiritually blind. They could not see it. They were spiritually deaf. They could not hear it. And they wanted no part of it. And they said, we know God spoke to Moses. Well, they hadn't seen that with their eyes, had they? No. That was a long time ago. But they still believe that. But yet they hear Jesus' words. They see the things that prove that he is who he says he is. And they still. And they still want to refute it. Verse 30. The man answered, and he said unto them, this is the one that was born blind. Why herein is a marvelous thing that you know not from where he is, and yet he has opened mine eyes. Why do you guys have such a difficult time trying to figure out where Jesus is from? You know. In essence, he's saying, you know that nobody can do this except he be from where? God. And you realize that they had already admitted as much? Did they not just tell the man a few verses earlier, give God the glory? Why? Because they knew only God could do this. No mere mortal, human, fleshly person could do this. It had to be someone from God. And he says, why are you guys having such a hard time? It's obvious where he's from. I mean, this is just your ordinary, average person, and he's got enough common sense to see. Got to be from God. Got to be. There's no doubt. In fact, verse 30, the man answered and he said unto them, verse 31, now we know that God heareth not sinners, but if any man be a worshiper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth. So what he's doing is he's making a argument based upon reason. He's saying, we all know, the Jewish people know, the people that believe in the law of Moses, we know that God hears not sinners. That's Isaiah 59 verse 2, right? You know, your sin separates you from your God so that he cannot hear you. He doesn't hear a sinner. So you are admitting that God is the only one that can do the miracle, and yet God used Jesus to do the miracle, so therefore Jesus can't be a sinner. He can't just be an average, ordinary person. He's got to be something more. Because in order for God to use him to accomplish such a feat, he's got to be more. This guy's an intelligent human being. He knows how to reason. Well, verse 32, he continues. He says, since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of the one that was born blind? He said, have you guys ever heard of this? In all of the books that you've got, in all the law of Moses, and everything that you've ever read or heard about, have you ever heard of anybody doing this? No. It's not there. No one that had ever been born blind had had their sight restored. Moses couldn't do that. Couldn't do it. But Jesus did. That's his argument. Verse 33, if this man were not of God, he could do nothing. You can put another star in your Bible if you want to. We started with Jesus, then we went to a prophet, and then we went to, hey, I'm his disciple. And now he is admitting vocally, he is confessing before everybody, this man is of God. Man, all of this testing is bringing this guy to where he needs to be. Verse 34, they answered and they said unto him, thou wast altogether born in sins, and dost thou teach us? And they cast him out. Pharisees didn't want to hear it. This guy can't teach them. I mean, they say, you're just an old sinful individual, and we are above you. We are the ones. We're the rulers. We set the standards, not you. You can't teach us. When we think we know too much to be taught by someone else, that's when we're in trouble. There's not a man alive today that cannot learn from someone else. And we always need to realize that. Quickly, we're going to finish up. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him, dost thou believe on the Son of God? Jesus has allowed him to go through all of these things to get to this point. And now he's going to test him again. Do you believe on the Son of God? He answered and he said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? Now that's fair. That's fair. Because this guy, he didn't know that much. He understood that Jesus had to be from God, but he didn't really understand how all that tied in. He hadn't been taught. Verse 37, Jesus said unto him, thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. I think, if my memory is correct, this is the second time that Jesus had openly confessed that he was the Son of God. He told the woman at the well, and now he is telling this man here, I'm him. I'm the one that you're looking for. Verse 38, and he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. You see what this man had to go through to get to that place to where, I mean, he is exactly right here in verse 38. To where he needs to be. He started with just Jesus, then he's a prophet, then, hey, I'm a disciple, then, hey, this guy's got to be from God, to now he is openly confessing Jesus is the Son of God and he is worshiping him as such. His faith matured, and it only matured through trials. Sometimes we want to avoid any kind of anything that's hard in our life, but it's only hard times that makes us who we are. That's the only thing that can mold us to be the people God would have us to be. Verse 39, Jesus said, "For judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind." I want to explain that in just a second. Let's read the rest of it. "And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words, and they said unto him, Are we blind also? And Jesus said unto them, If you were blind, you should have no sin. But now you say, We see, therefore your sin remaineth." Now when we look at that and we think about it in our physical mind, we think, that's a contradiction. He's saying the blind people can see, and the people that can see are blind. But you got to, again, turn your spiritual mindset on. And what he is saying is, if we are blinded to our own thoughts and feelings, if we are willing to overlook all the things that are going to hold us back and are willing to be able to see what he is teaching, then we can be without sin. We can have all of that forgiven. But he's saying, if we are so full of pride and we are so haughty and smug and arrogant that we think we know it all, we will never be able to truly see. Oh, we may think we can see, and we may think we have all the answers, but self-righteousness will never get us to where we need to be. So therefore, Jesus says we need to be like the blind man. We need to admit we can't see on our own. We need to go back to where we talked about, verse 5. Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." He is the only one that can illuminate what is before us to show us what we need to do. And until we all see that and share that with other people, nobody can have their sins forgiven. I appreciate your attention. I'm out of time, so I'll be quiet and we'll pray and be dismissed.